You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all?
Yeah. Our government cares about
they
you.
They ain't giving up a second thought about you, no. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me. You gotta take a look at yourself, yeah. Get some people.
Where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
What your life is.
What's with your life?
I'm running like a rare disease.
I'm running like a rare disease. Get some people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yeah. You gotta learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Hotep family. Hope everything is well with you today. I hope you're going to have a good day today. And I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it isn't, I know you'll get it done anyway, because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is. And that's why we love you and appreciate you. But if you don't have to, but if you are out there, please mask up. Please keep that safe distance. Please continue to wash your hands. Coronavirus is serious, ain't it? It is serious, and it doesn't discriminate. In fact, it has hit, obviously, people, us and Latinos, more than it's hit anybody else in this country. Let that be known. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at www.timeforanawakening.com. And at the top, you'll see podcast, click on that, and then you'll see the drop down African Perspectives. Click on that, and there'll be programs that are dated and entitled. Thanks to my good brother and friend, Brother Kwaku. Appreciate him. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. All times are going to give, all times are going to give our Eastern times. On Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds Public Affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jihad Ahmed. And then from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central. Black Therapy Central with Dr. Kamban and her daughter, Nataki Kamban. And then right after that, every first and third Mondays, Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. Tuesday night, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Thursdays from 7 to 9, after 7 with host Shani B. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, you know it's right. You know that's right. It's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Fridays, 8 until. Saturday, 4 p.m. to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then 7 to 9 on Saturday, Sankofa, the Elders Council, hosted by Alfonso, Brother Alfonso Watkins. And then on Sunday, once again, it's Time for an Awakening at 7 p.m. on Sunday with hosts Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is We Buy Black. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses, WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. Contact my good brother, Bomani Tayemba, Africa for the Africans. Give him a call at 404-931-9429. That's 404-931-9429. He
He has a trip upcoming, has not changed yet so far, and that's November 20th through the 30th. $3,700, I know. To drop $3,700 like that, and, you know, some people got it like that, very few, especially now in this pandemic, because a lot of people ain't got. That's deep, ain't it? But give him a call. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. Renoko Rashidi. Renoko has a trip upcoming. Go to his website, drrenoko.com, or you can give Brother Renoko a call at 323-803-8663. That's 323-803-8663. Renoko Rashidi, he's got a trip January 21st to February 4th, 2021, going to Uganda and Rwanda for $4,200. And then he has a trip to Kemet, August 1st to August 14th. August 1st to August 14th, going to Kemet. So check out Brother Renoko. Habashah. Habashah Incorporated. The brothers and sisters at HabashahIncorporated.org, they are doing the work. Check them out. Go online to HabashahIncorporated.org and see the great job that they're doing here in this country, particularly in the Atlanta area, with sustainable agriculture. And that's what they're doing in Africa with the Kashi Project. They have the buildings are up. They have video of it. It looks beautiful. And, I mean, it's just going to be something else. Check out HabashahIncorporated.org. Habashah stands for Helping Africa by Establishing Schools at Home and Abroad. They need to be supported. They're doing the work. Donations are always accepted. The Medu Bookstore. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Mama Nia, please check her out. Give her a call if there's a book that you're looking for. But they have more than just books. They have postcards, greeting cards, T-shirts, figurines, other kinds of gifts. But if there's a book that you're looking for, give her a call at 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. That's the Medu Bookstore. Of course, Medu In the Kemetic language means writing. There's a word that follows Medu, and that's Netcher, which means gods, the writing of the gods. So what the Greeks called hieroglyphs is Medu Netcher. So that's the proper word to use, Medu Netcher. And the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall has the written word just for you. Check them out at 404-346-3263. I was in the Black Dot Bookstore the other day. Brother Gazemde Ajamo, he has a radio program, The Urban Politician. And I'm trying to see if we can get his radio program here with us on Time for an Awakening. That'd be great. I'm trying to work something out. But give Brother Gazemde Ajamo a call at 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. And Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End on Ralph David Abernathy, cross street from Soul Veg, down the street from Shrine of the Black Madonna or the West End Mall, right up in that area, up in that, as my daughter would say, right in that pocket. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. Give them a call at 404-444-1635. That's 404-444-1635. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Cooperative Economics, or as we like to say, Family Center Economics. Their radio broadcast tomorrow, every Thursday night on Blog Talk Radio. Us Lifting Us, the Dare to Win program. You can listen online. Go to blogtalkradio.com/ULU. Once again, the program is called Dare to Win. Or you can call in at 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789 at 9 p.m. from 9 to 10. The ULU Thursday night broadcast, Us Lifting Us. Sanjay Dash Aiti, I didn't talk to her, but we text because I made a donation. I didn't see any information about it, and they got another information. They sent me something, and I'm like, that wasn't what I was looking for until we communicated through text, and I don't know if she's in Haiti or if she's here in the States. Didn't ask that. But we got it resolved, and that's always important because I believe in the work that they're doing in Haiti, and I support it. There's a lot of things, and many of the things that I mentioned to you about, I support. And I'm asking that you look at them. I'm not asking you to drop no dollars. Just give a look. Go online and give a look, you know? Sonjay-Haiti, SONJAYITI.org, Sonjay-Haiti. They are doing outstanding work in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti and in the rural area with the children, with education, with health care, agriculture, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship when they're raising the chickens and selling them and so forth. So it's great work. Akabin Institute, Baba Baruti and Sister Mama Yabaruti, outstanding job of educating our young warriors. Please make your check or money order out to Akabin Institute. Send it to P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. Now, of course, I'm saying that to those who are old school like myself. But if you got PayPal and Cash App and you want to make a consistent donation, you can do that too on Cash App. Go to $YAA, the letter M, Baruti, Baruti, and make your donation to Akabin Institute. The Inye Sesim. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. October 6th. Out of their own mouths shall the murderers be condemned. Beautiful sister Ida B. Wells. Whatever the reason, whatever the source, consistently, historically, Europeans have demonstrated that they understand that they are our enemies. We don't understand it, but they understand it clearly. And believe me, they act in such. But because of their deviousness, because of their manipulation and undermining, we don't understand. And that's like Stevie Wonder. I think we said this the other day. When you believe in things you don't understand, you suffer. They have committed full genocide against uncountable people, people extinct based on the blood lust built into some psychic whelm of white supremacy. They have slaughtered others to the point of decimation, taking whatever enticed them into their perverted homes as act of scientific charity. They have reduced whole populations to slavery, killing their minds, bodies, and spirit in the process. They have continued to use humanity for target practice, using the most destructive weaponry imaginable by minds driven mad by mirrors that cannot lie. They have killed the aliens they have yet to encounter. They have killed them. That most of us focus on helping Europeans change into something that they are not should tell us something about what most of us do not know. The mentally damaged will find ways, even in light of truth, to excuse the crimes and gain the approval of those they love to fear, even if it means the blatant denial of their birthright and disrespect of their ancestors. If only we had time to get them to see the error of their ways, their short-sighted vision of our enemy. If only we had time, but we do not. We don't have time. They will just have to become courageous enough to follow what they see warriors do on their own, or they lose their place. Affirm, I do not have the time to show those who want to die how to live. Affirm, I do not have time to show those who want to die how to live. You know, I consistently, it is easy to blame ourselves, and most of us do, but I put the blame where it squarely belongs, on Europeans, on Caucasians, who for hundreds of years, through manipulation, through trickery, skullduggery, you name it, they've done it. One of the things that is deeply important to me is the freeing of the African mind. We're going to talk today about neocolonialism and the importance of Kwame Nkrumah and how what he was trying to do, but yet the mind of African people is still subjugated by Europeans, is still influenced, is still directed by Europeans. So I do not have time to show those who want to die how to live, but we must consistently try our best to influence those who are on the precipices of falling into the European mindset of how to live as Africans. October 7th. Our ancestors courageously fought back against those barbaric destroyers of African life. And we, their descendants, have and continue to shamefully dishonor them, our African cultural sovereignty, by forming these intimate associations with the religious belief systems and cultural structures of the enemies of our ancestors, the enemies of African people, hence our own enemies. Kobe Kambon. It is incredible how the progenitors of European culture conveniently redefine the African to suit their agenda. This is exactly what they did and are still doing to classical African civilization. When they cannot dismiss original African thought, behavior, or material technological mastery, they systematically deny that African-centered thought and behavior and European-centered thought and behavior are different or incompatible. It is all simply to reduce to human thought, with them being the defining universal idea. We are erroneously and historically operating on the unavoidable progression principle that European culture is the natural culmination of the best that human culture has to offer. Before I finish reading, as I read that, I just keep thinking of Donald Trump. I hate Trump. And of course, his patriotic lessons, you know, not critical race theory, not the 1619 Project, not all this other. No, we must, just like this one commercial, the American greatness, you know, because they want to believe that they are the paradigm. They are the idea. They are the model of Americans' greatness. We are erroneously and ahistorically operating on an unavoidable progression principle that European culture is the natural culmination of the best that human culture has to offer. Little could be furthest from the truth. European culture hindrance arrested or destroyed every culture it encountered. It was a process of destruction and pillage, not contribution or improvement through infusion. As I told you, there never was any integration. Integration means that you take what you have, I take what I have, we bring it together, and whatever goods that we might have together that might blend, that's integration. No, this was a forced quasi-assimilation because they believe that what they have is best. Affirm, I have not forgotten who we are. Affirm, I have not forgotten who we are. The Enye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Since we're going to talk about Kwame Nkrumah today, we're going to look at what I usually read about Kwame Nkrumah. Because I'm posing some questions, I hope that you can join me at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. In this discussion on colonialism and neocolonialism, and which way do we go? I believe strongly, this is, of course, the speech of freedom in 1961, 4 years after the independence of Ghana from British subjugation. I believe strongly and sincerely that with deep-rooted wisdom and dignity and the innate respect for human lives, the intense humanity that is our heritage, that the African culture united under one federal government will emerge not just as another world bloc to flaunt its wealth and strength, but as a great power whose greatness is indestructible because it is built not on fear and envy and suspicion, nor won at the expense of others, but founded on hope, trust, friendship, directed to the good of all mankind. He didn't say Ghana. He said Africa. He even said it at the speech in 1957. All those Europeans there, he said, this is what we're talking about. We ain't talking about that. And we're talking about African sovereignty. We're talking about Africans coming together, not any particular country. If you want to maintain your cultural designation of being Fulani, of being Hausa, being Igbo, being Ashanti, whatever, you do that. But remember, number one, that we are Africans, because we don't suffer because we're Cameroonian or Barbadoan or American African or Brazilian African. We suffer because we are Africans. The European didn't say, well, we're just going to take these people, or we're just going to dog these. No, he didn't see that. He didn't give a damn. He just saw what he saw, and what he saw were Africans, and he wanted to subjugate them, oppress them, take their land, enslave them, make them work from can't see in the morning to can't see at night, destroy their memory, destroy their minds. Kwame Nkrumah said this many years after. If we do not approach the problems in Africa with a common front and a common purpose, we shall be haggling and wrangling among ourselves until we are colonized again and become the trolls of a far greater colonialism than we had suffered heretofore. To be truly liberated, African people must come to know the nature of European thought and behavior in order to understand the effect that the European has on our ability to think victorious, what the European has on our minds. There was that saying, not only is your liberation impossible, it is unthinkable, because what you cannot conceive, you cannot achieve. It's the mind. We must be able to separate our thoughts from Europeans' thoughts so that we can visualize a future that is not dominated by Europe. This is a demand by an African-centered view, because why? We are Africans. And because the future to which Europe leads us is genocide. Dr. Marimba Ani. We must not be the people who walked but left no footprints, who talked but had nothing meaningful to say, who labored but built nothing for themselves. And so we lay at your feet the builder's spade and shovel, the mason's trowel and square, Africa's books of wisdom. Now go and build for eternity. Brother Lester Middleton. As I said before, you can go to YouTube and put in Brother Lester Velt Middleton's. He has some great interviews with our outstanding scholars and historians. Probably all of them now, just as he is, ancestors. So it would behoove. That's the thing about YouTube. You can let the ancestors speak. You can hear Garvey. Not a recreation, but you can hear Marcus Garvey. And all the way up. So let the ancestors speak, even to the contemporaries of the day. You know? So, colonialism, neocolonialism. The problems that have happened to African people are so numerous. The question becomes, is it too far gone for us? Can we recover from this situation? You know, I don't know. Thank you. About time, man. Come on now. Sometimes, I tell you, you know, the technology, it betrays you. Kwame Nkrumah was right about neocolonialism. Just like Kwame Nkrumah predicted in 1965, neocolonialism is indeed the last stage of imperialism. And now, the colonial, I mean, has whoever wrote this article, you know, I don't use particular words because understand something. A word being used gives you an image, gives you an impression, gives you a connotation of what that word wants to convey. So I don't use black. I use African. I don't use colonial masters. I may use colonizers or, you know, I don't use the words that would give an impression, even though one may say, and they say, well, Brother Oshie, that's semantics. You know, that's, no, it's not. No, it's not. Because the language, of course, is not ours. It's by design that Europeans use particular words because they want to put into your mind and convey a particular message consistently using that. Don't you know that many of our, when you automatically say the word slave, even though other human beings have been in servitude, but automatically that word has our face on, just like the word Holocaust. The word Holocaust has the face of European Jews. And the word Holocaust is the English word. They have their own word, Shoah. But because of how the word is used to garner that sympathy and so forth for Europeans, you know, and Lord, we paid a hell of a cost. This was written a few years ago. In his book titled Neocolonialism, The Stage of Imperialism, published in 1965, this article was written in September of 2018. Ghana leader and perhaps the greatest African that ever lived, Kwame Nkrumah emphasized on the message on African unity as the only option for Africa's total liberation from colonial rule, from colonial colonizers, from the colonizers. Once again, I'm going to read that. He emphasized on the message of African unity, not Ghanaian unity, not Nigerian, Cameroonian, Tanzanian, Kenya, Botswanian, no, Africa's total unity, regardless of whatever part of the continent you're on, and regardless, even if you're outside in the diaspora, African unity. Imagine if Africa was united and those Africans who are outside of it understood that I have a base, I have a home, and so when somebody messes with me, I know I have backing. So you can't disrespect me like they do now everywhere on the damn planet. even after independence, Nkrumah continued to call on Africa's leaders to come together in formation of a United States of Africa, which, according to him, will help protect Africa from colonial incursions, whom he said still have pernicious interests in Africa. Through the formation of one army, adoption of one currency, application of regional integration and acceptance of a one African capital state, Kwame Nkrumah believed that Africa would be better positioned to grow as a people, which we truly are, regardless of our colonizing situation, and to be better prepared for the second coming of any incursion into Africa, any colonialisms. According to him, Africa was drifting into a more dangerous phase, which sees the continent ruled through puppet leaders who do the bidding of their former colonial rulers, the Compadre bourgeoisie, who serve as an agent for the captive traders and who help carry out their orders. To mark the independence of Ghana, the first country to gain independence in Africa, Kwame Nkrumah, the hero of African independence and the first president, delivered the first independence speech on March 6, 1957, to a large crowd of people, including representatives from Britain and the monarchy, the so-called monarchy, and high-ranking British delegates. With the boldness of a lion and fire in his eyes, not minding the presence of those former dictators, he roared, "We have won the battle and again rededicated ourselves, but our independence is meaningless unless it is linked up with the total liberation of Africa." This is what he said. He said, "We have won the battle and again rededicated ourselves, but our independence is meaningless unless it is linked up with the total liberation of Africa." To conclude his speech on that blessed day, he said, "Seeing you in this, it doesn't matter how far my eyes go. I can see that you are here in your millions. And my last warning to you is that you are to stand firm behind us so that we can prove to the world that when the African is given a chance, we can show the world that it is, then we are somebody. We have awakened. We will not sleep anymore. Today, from now on, there is a new African in the world." Unknown to Kwame Nkrumah, the same people to which he was ready to lay down his life within a few years, on February 24th, 1966, celebrate the military police coup that overthrew him and brought down his statue. The coup itself was welcomed in Ghana with far more enthusiasm than had been the case for independence. Only the presidential guard put up a brief resistance, and within 24 hours, the coup was over. Nkrumah's statue outside Parliament House, which proclaimed him the founder of the nation, was battered to the ground and smashed into pieces. The bars were jammed with celebrants the night after the coup. There were demonstrations of support for the new rulers, who styled themselves the National Liberation Council. Even members of the 74-member delegates that had accompanied Nkrumah to China deserted their former leader. The then foreign minister, Kweisan Saki, who Nkrumah had sent to protest the seating of the new Ghanaian government mission at the OAU, the Organization of African Unity, meeting in Addis Ababa, flew instead to Accra, where he pledged his loyalty to the new government. So weak. Sadly, this great lion will die of prostate cancer on my birthday, April 27th, in 1972, in a hospital in Romania, while on exile, while he was in exile in Guinea. According to reports, the Ghanaian government, after Kwame's overthrow led by Dr. Kofi Boussaya, rejected pleas from Guinea between 1970 and 71 to allow Nkrumah to return home for treatment after his ill health surfaced. And had it not been for the pleas of his mother, who said, "I want to touch the body of my son before he is buried, or I will die," this great African luminary would have been buried in exile. The embalmed body of Kwame Nkrumah was exhumed and finally flown to Ghana on July of 1972 in a special Guinean Air Force plane after months of negotiations. All flags were ordered to fly at half-staff, half-mast, until the country's first leader was buried. And Nkrumah's body was again exhumed on July 1st, 1992, and reburied in a mausoleum in Accra, built on the same grounds where he declared Ghana's liberation on March 6, 1957. I've been there. Today, the so-called colonizers are back within a space of 1 week, and in what appears to be a battle to dominate Africa, Theresa May, the Prime Minister of the UK, and Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, embarked on a pernicious trade visit to Africa. This was a confirmation of the internal battle over the dominance of Africa between Europe and the United post-breakfast of the UK, United Kingdom post-Brexit. Brexit. Excuse me. Kwame Nkrumah was right. The colonizers are here again. And we are unprepared to put up a resistance. So what's next? What's next? The colonizers are here again. What's next? That's the question that we're posing. What are we going to do now? But, oh, you know what I didn't do? I'm going to make this announcement right now. As I said, this Friday, the Pan-African Federalist Movement, which has a conference coming up next week, Thursday, the 15th through the 18th. But there's all kinds of other things that are going on online, on Zoom, and so forth. Plenty. And I think the beauty of that is that you can participate in multiple ones. You can check one out for an hour or two, then go to another. I mean, some of them, of course, you got to pay. Once you pay, then you'll get the link for you to join. But then you can leave and come back and so forth. And there's others, you know. So there's one that Baba Baruti is involved in. And if you want to go online and check it out, www.dtc1.org. D as in dog, or D as in David, T as in Tom, C as in Charles, the number one.org. www.dtc1.org. And it's the prophecy of the prophet, a revolutionary revival honoring the upright man, October 17th and 18th. October 17th and 18th. Okay, that's that. October 17th and 18th. And of course, that's Saturday and Sunday. October 17th and 18th. They have many, I mean, if you go online, you'll see there's a number of things that you can listen to now. But Baba Baruti and Mama Yah Baruti will be a part of that. Self-defense makes sense. The prophecy of the prophet, a revolutionary revival. Defense makes sense.
and they show the Black Panther Party. They show a sister that I know in Central Park giving the salute, the rumble of her storm, the fury and of her wrath, the prophecy of the prophet, a revolutionary revival. So check that out. And, of course, they show Nat, the brother Parker, who brought Birth of a Nation, the Nat Turner story. They show him. That's kind of cool. So, and of course, they got my other brother, the Black Panther, brother Ben Njai, can be part of it. Always like to listen to him and talk with him. Baba Barudi and Mama Yaba Barudi are part of it. Many others. That's October 17th and 18th. The Prophecy of the Prophet, a Revolutionary Revival. Go online, check it out. When faced with impossible odds, say they try me, never say, why me? When faced with impossible odds, say, try me, never say, why me? That's right. Face the reality of the problem. The security of ignorance generates a normalization of decadence. The Prophecy of the Prophet. So check that out. That's going to be October 17th and 18th. The Pan-African Conference, the Pan-African Federalist Movement. Now understand something. Because it's a way that you can still participate. If it was back in the day when there was, you have a conference here in this city, a conference in that city, and so forth. We definitely need to have a functional unity of what we're doing. I'm going to harp on that. We need to have a functional unity of what we're doing. All the entities, all the organizations, and not just here in the States, but globally. There in the UK, or in Europe, in France, in the Caribbean, in Central and South America, wherever, if you believe in African liberation, African self-determination, African sovereignty, then we need to come together. We need to sit down at the table. And just as Malcolm said, the only thing that we are discussing is how we are going to bring it into existence. That's it. Our minds and our hearts are open. I'm not bringing anything to that discussion about my theology. I'm not bringing anything to that discussion about my sexual preference. I'm not bringing anything to that table to deal with any other issue outside of the bottom line issue. It is African sovereignty, African independence, African self-determination, African liberation, African sovereignty. I'm not bringing anything to that table, but my open heart and my open mind of how we can make this happen and how we can make this happen now. Because in the situation that we're in, we need to happen. It needs to happen now. We can't be like, oh yeah, 2035. No, we don't have time. Time has been up. When we talk about the recolonization of Africa that is taking place at this very moment, talking about 300 million Chinese, 300 million Chinese to occupy Africa. And of course, they are there. And yes, they are doing some things. They're building some roads. They're building some buildings and so forth and so on.
unlike the European who just, but they, you know, they ain't doing it out of humanitarian efforts and humanitarian needs. No, they want the resources that they don't have. It's deep that Africa, you know, when people talk about this island or this huge landmass of Pangaea, and many people believe that it was a landmass that was part of the formation of this planet. And that's why you really don't see a lot of dinosaur bones in Africa. You see them in North America. In fact, they just found another one not some years ago, let alone the one that is in the Field Museum in Chicago. In fact, they had on TV just a few days ago because somebody's planning to buy it for hundreds of millions of dollars. But what you do see in Africa, of course, are the bones of humanity, older than any place else on the planet. But what you do see in Africa, because of how Africa was formed, the richest landmass on the planet in terms of mineral wealth. You name it, it is there. And it's still there at this moment, let alone the hundreds of years that Europeans have been extracting it and others. It is still there, waiting for us to get our damn act together and manage it. That's why I don't give a damn about voting. I don't care about this system. The bigger issue to me is Africa. Just like Marcus Garvey said when he's talking about, somebody asked him about Jamaica. Do I have more concern over an island as opposed to a continent? I'm paraphrasing, but that's pretty much what he was saying. I'm more concerned about a continent than I am an island. My concern is about the continent of Africa and African people. That's what's important as far as I'm concerned. And if African people on this part of the world, and here in North America, whether in Canada or United States or in Central or South America, in this hemisphere, in the Western hemisphere, some of the most technologically advanced Africans, some of the most, from the monetary aspect, one of the more wealthier Africans. I'm saying that's what we have to do. And the Africans who have a tremendous wealth, serious sick wealth, there's a few billionaires. There's surely some Africans with hundreds of millions. We need resources. We need the financial resources because we need to build the infrastructure on the continent to move Africa into the 21st century everywhere, to end the poverty, to build the infrastructure of sewage systems, water systems, clean energy, wind and solar, solar cars, battery operated cars, all of these things are necessary for Africa's survival, for Africa to move into the 21st century. I'm going to take a break. I'm going to come back for the break. Got another piece to read, and then, of course, I'm going to ask for your input. Ask for your input. What do you think? Like I said, this Friday upcoming, I got the brothers from the Pan-African Federalist Movement of here in North America, Brother Singer Bay, who's the executive director, and Brother Sam. And I'll see if I can still try to get Brother Mwalimu Mstata, who is the chairperson. But I know he's probably very busy because the conference is coming up next week. It is coming up next week. So, brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You stay with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Slipping into darkness.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programming, that was War, 1972, Slipping into Darkness. Pretty soon you're going to pay. That's for damn show. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. This program, African Perspectives, on Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central. And then right after that is from 9 to 10, Conversation Reparations. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Thursdays, After 7, we'll host Shani B from 7 to 9. And then on Fridays, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, you know it is time for an awakening. Saturday, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers from 4 to 6. And then from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council with host Alfonso Watkins. And then on Sunday, once again, time for an awakening at 7 p.m. with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Yeah. Pretty soon you're going to pay. I'm going to take a call. Caller. Caller 404-453. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, caller. 404-453. Okay. You're free to listen. That's for sure. If you want to call and listen, you're free to do that anytime. But if you want to talk, you can press 1, and that'll put you in the mix. Or you can hang up and call again. That'll put you in the mix also. Read this piece, it's another older piece, a few years, from blackagendareport.com. Blackagendareport.com. The coup against Nkrumah and the role African Americans in the African Revolution, by a brother named Abadiemi Ekwueze. Abadiemi Ekwueze. American African political organizations played a key role in influencing Kwame Nkrumah from the 1930s until his removal from power in 1966 and beyond. Although the coup was designed by the U.S. Although the coup was designed by the U.S. to halt the advancement of the African Revolution and the internationalization of the struggle of African and American-African solidarity efforts accelerated from the late 1960s through the 1990s, when the last vestiges of European rule were eliminated in South Africa and Namibia. And of course, you know, European rule has not been eliminated in South Africa and Namibia. It still goes on. The Germans are still in control of Namibia, which was they called Southwest Africa at the time. And of course, the South African Caucasians are still in control, thanks to Nelson Mandela. 5 decades ago, on February 24th, 1966, the coup was carried out against Kwame Nkrumah, the leader of Ghana's independent movement and chief architect of the 20th century African revolutionary struggle. Nkrumah, the founder of the Convention People's Party in 1949, which led the former British out of the Gold Coast to national independence in 1957, and was out of Ghana on a peace mission aimed at bringing an end to the United States intervention in Vietnam, the president has stopped over in Beijing, People's Republic of China, the consultation with the premier, Chou En Lai, and had planned to continue on to Hanoi. When Nkrumah later met with Chou En Lai, he was informed that there had been a military coup in Ghana. Nkrumah's initial reaction was disbelief, yet the Chinese leader told him that these setbacks were in the course of the revolutionary struggle. The coup was carried out by low-ranking military officers and police officials and with the direct assistance and coordination by the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency of the United States, and the United States Department, the State Department. Leading members of the CPP were killed, arrested, and driven into exile, while the party press was seized along with the national radio and television stations. The CCP officers were attacked by counter-revolutionary mobs encouraged by the CIA and the military police clique that had seized power. Books by Nkrumah and other socialist leaders were trashed and burned. Cadres from various national liberation movements who had taken refuge in Ghana or were receiving political and military training were deported by the coup leaders, who called themselves the National Liberation Council. Other fraternal allies of the Ghanaian and African revolutions were fired from their jobs within the government and educational sectors and the media. The CIA involvement was widely believed to be pivotal at the time, but in later years, firm documented proof was brought to light with the declassifications of the United States Department files were originated under the administration of Lyndon Baines Johnson. A letter of protest had been sent by the U.S. Undersecretary of State for African Affairs, G. Menon Williams, to Ghana's embassy in Washington during the late 1965 in the aftermath of the publication of Nkrumah's book, Neocolonialism, The Last Stage of Imperialism, which outlined the central role of Washington and Wall Street in the continuing underdevelopment of Africa. Nkrumah was born in Nzume region of Ghana in 1909. He would later travel to the U.S. in 1935 to pursue higher education at Lincoln University in Pennsylvania, the first historically American-African college and university, the HCBUs, in the country, founded during our captivity in 1854. Lincoln was an ideal atmosphere for Nkrumah, who studied the social sciences, philosophy, and theology. He became involved in American-African struggle through work with African student unions and associations, where he served as a president for several years, as well as the Council on African Affairs with Dr. William Edward Burkhart Du Bois and Dr. William Hunson and Paul Roberson. He became a licensed Presbyterian clergyman, giving him access to speaking engagements in numerous American African churches. Nkrumah worked during his college days doing odd jobs and experiencing severe economic deprivation. During leaving the U.S. in 1945, Nkrumah settled in Britain for 2 years, where he helped organize the historic Fifth Pan-African Congress at Manchester in October of that year of 1945. The gathering was chaired by Du Bois and enjoyed the participation of other leading figures within the African liberation movements, including George Padmore of Trinidad, who had worked with the Communist International Party during the late 1920s and early 1930s. Amy Ashworth Garvey, the first wife of Marcus Garvey, who helped left-leaning politics. Jomo Kenyatta of Kenya, along with representatives of trade unions, farmer organizations, and students. After Nkrumah returned to Ghana in 1947, and with the funding of the CPP, less than 2 years later, he would land in prison twice for organizing against the British imperialists. Due to his party's mass support during a colonial-controlled reform election in 1951, Nkrumah was released from prison and appointed leader of the government business as part of a transitional arrangement toward independence, won later in March of 1957. During the independence period, Ghana became a haven for American African political figures, artists, professionals, and business people. Some within this group became staunch defenders of Nkrumah's government, which was under increasing pressure from the CIA and the State Department after 1961. Several hundred American Africans took up residency in Ghana, including Maya Angelou
a writer, dancer, and supporter of African liberation movements. Alice Windham of St. Louis, a social worker and educator who helped organize the itinerary of Malcolm X when he traveled to Ghana in 1964 of May. Vicki Holmes Garvin, a labor activist and member of the Communist Party, served as co-worker with Robert and Mabel Williams. If you know who Robert Williams is and his wife Mabel Williams, that's the brother who took up guns. He wasn't no joke. Right on. Robert and Mabel Williams in China several years later after leaving Ghana. Julius Mayfield, a novelist and essayist who left the U.S., aimed the attacks on Robert Williams, amid the attacks on Robert Williams. He worked in Ghana as a journalist and editor of the African Review. A Pan-Africanist journalist in support of the CPP government, Du Bois was given Ghanaian citizenship and appointed as director of the Encyclopedia Africana. Shirley Graham, Du Bois, the second wife of Dr. William Edward Burghardt Du Bois, a political organizer and a member of the Communist Party, prolific writer and producer, was appointed by Nkrumah to head Ghana's national television, among others. After the coup in February 1966, most of the progressive American Africans were forced to leave Ghana due to the pro-imperialist character of the NLC regime. Du Bois had died in August of 1963. I've been to the Du Bois Center where he is entombed. And in fact, on the 40th anniversary of Ghana's independence, I was there in 1997. However, his wife, who would work as a leading figure in Ghana, in Ghanaian government, was placed under house arrest by military police officials. Shirley Graham Du Bois left Ghana and later lived in Egypt and China, where she died in 1976. 5 decades later, the CIA and the State Department are still heavily engaged in the destabilization of African states. Let me say it again. 5 decades later, the CIA and the State Department are still heavily engaged in the destabilization of African states and progressive movements. The U.S. Africa Command, AFRICOM, founded in 2008 under Barack Obama, is constructing airstrips, drone stations, and military bases in various regions across the continent. The anti-imperialist struggle in regard to interventions in Africa is just as relevant today as it was in 1966. American African political organizations played a key role in influencing Nkrumah from 1930s until his removal from power in 1966 and beyond, right up until the time of his death in 1972 when he died in Romania. Although the overthrow of Nkrumah's government was designed by the U.S. imperialists to halt the advancement of African revolution and the internationalization of the struggle of Africans and American Africans, solidarity efforts accelerated from the late 60s through the 1990s when the last vestiges of European rule, which of course it never, did I read that again? Shucks, I believe I did. Younger generations of American African activists gain much from the study of the intersections between the struggle for liberation inside the U.S., the Caribbean, Latin America, Europe, and African continent. It was during this period, at the conclusion of World War II and extending to the beginning of the 21st century, that the tremendous gains were won in the area of national liberation, Pan-African unity, and socialist orientation. Today, with strong emphasis being placed on the demonstrations against the use of lethal force against American Africans by the police and vigilantes, identification with broader struggles taking place within the continent, within the African world, are often overlooked. Despite the ideological advancements of the previous period where people of African descent began to identify America as American Africans, there appears to be an uncritical revisionist back to a U.S.-centered approach resurrecting blackness in a contravented to notions of an African personality and Pan-Africanism advanced by Nkrumah and his collaborators. That's what I've been saying. We don't want to be African. We want to be black. I know there are some of us who use black and African interchangeably. But I'm saying at this time, for all that we do, we need to make a distinction. Because when I think of black, I think of Stephen A. Smith. I think of Steve Harvey. I think of all those other Negroes and apologists and political opportunists. Despite the ideological advances of the previous period where people of African descent began to identify as American African, there appears to be an uncritical revisionist back to a U.S.-centered approach resurrecting blackness. Oh, my screen is different here. Are you brothers and sisters still with me out there? Apparently something happened here. I don't know what happened, but please call back, brothers and sisters. Please call back. I told you sometimes this. Sometimes you might say something and bam, you're off the air. So please give us a call. These developments, if gone unchecked, will break off the American African movement from its most natural allies among like-minded forces within the entire African world. In addition, with the lack of emphasis on internationalism, the American African struggle will be hard-pressed to reach its full potential through winning allies throughout the world. I have a caller, 646-646. Good afternoon.
Hey, ODO, you had me cracking up, man, when you said, when I think of black, I think of Stephen A. Smith. Man, yeah. that's a special Negro there right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, man. It is. Yeah, yes, he is.
Ooh, is he special?
Yes, he is.
And... you know, first of all, people don't know that he's a Jamaican.
Oh, no, didn't know that. I didn't know he was Jamaican.
Yeah, no. his family come from Jamaica, and, you know, they became modernized.
Yeah.
Also, he was a pretty decent basketball player.
Right.
Good enough to get a scholarship to Winston-Salem.
Right.
And to play for the great Coach Gaines.
Yep, Big House.
Big House Gaines, yeah. Yeah. Interesting dude, man. Real interesting dude. You know, he has that Caribbean background in him. You know, a mama's boy to the tilt.
Yeah, well, he mentions that. He mentions that a lot.
Yeah, he was a mama's boy.
Yeah.
Total. You know, and greatly influenced by his sisters too.
Mm-hmm.
So he's one of those people that, you know, female led. And you could see it in a lot of his analysis most of the time. You know.
Well, I mean, what was interesting? What was interesting? There have been times where he took a position, and the Caucasian Max Kellerman took a position that was more in favor of us culturally than him. You know, in fact, others had commented on it. To the point of questioning his blackness. Oh man, he was steam. He was all.
He would go nutty.
Yeah.
That would get him to go nutty because he's a proud what they say or what they call, he's a proud black man. That's what the people say. You know, so
yeah.
I mean, hey man, I get a kick out of him, man. You know, I used to really like it when him and old Skip would go at it, because I mean Skip is wild, B. I mean That's the most hatefulest white man in the world. And he don't got no shame about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know if you checked it out, but you know, I'm going to tell you something. The beauty of YouTube is that you will run across some gems, man, like the gem that we ran across this week when Deer in the Headlights West. You know? And then, you know, there's also another gem with Jalen Rose putting it on Skip, man. You gotta watch that, man, where Jalen exposed Skip for the fraud that he was. You know what I mean?
Really, I didn't hip to that one. Send me,
really play.
Yeah, send me that one. I obviously happened some years ago because
I gotta try and find that one, man.
Because Skip Bayless hasn't been on ESPN for years. He's been on Fox.
He's on Fox now.
He's on Fox with
Shannon Sharp. I never understood, and it goes to prove that if you got certain cool tendencies, the white man will love you. You know, mm-hmm. Now you know that man Shannon Sharp ain't articulate enough to be on national TV.
Well, I think so. I mean, I believe that he is. I think he has progressed. I mean, obviously he used to mumble a lot. Yeah, he used to mumble a lot, but I mean, he's more articulate now, and I like his viewpoints. You know, there have been some others. When they first started having sports writers on television, the sports reporters with Dick Schaap. I've always liked Dick Schaap because of how he wrote, and I thought he was objectionable, you know, particularly as it related to American African athletes. And the fact that I was a New York Jets fan, Joe Namath, and Joe had a show, which, of course, Dick Schaap was the host of back in the day. But yet it was his work with Muhammad Ali, even more so than
Howard
Cosell, you know. And of course, I always thought Dick Schaap was, you know. And so on the program, he would have William Roden. I love Bill Roden and his book.
I met Bill a couple of times. Very nice. Nice man.
Yeah.
I used to see him going to work.
Okay.
When I was working for New York City Transit, and because he lived not too far from where my station was,
yeah.
And he would come in, you know, and we would talk sports for like 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Very nice guy.
Yeah. I love Bill Roden and his book,
but you know,
Million Dollar Slave, talking about the athletes.
They had a guy on the show. He passed away, man.
Ralph Wiley?
Probably one of the most profound sports writers.
Ralph Wiley.
There you go.
Ralph Wiley. Love Ralph Wiley.
And Ralph was...
Yeah.
You knew Ralph?
No, I did not know Ralph Wiley.
Oh.
But at a Black Press... they had the Black Press convention here. And I didn't meet him, but he was there and I saw him, you know. Along with Stuart Scott.
Stuart, but you know my favorite out of all of them right now? Howard Bryant.
Who?
Howard Bryant.
Oh, yes, Howard Bryant.
I like Howard Bryant. Howard's no joke, man.
Yeah.
You know the crazy thing about Howard is? Howard was married to a white woman, man. I asked him one day, how did he do it?
Well, that doesn't surprise me that some maintain their, well, in his case, this blackness, you know.
He grew up in racist Boston.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man. But,
well, see, and you know what? That's a good reason why, see? You know.
Oh, yeah. There ain't no Boston. Becky's up in Boston, man.
Yeah.
You know, just because
you're going to get smacked around.
He came to his senses and got rid of her.
Yeah.
But, hey, the thing is that, you know, there are some people out there that have strong positions. And, you know, I try to say this. Sometimes you do get white people that have good commentary that are somewhat balanced in a sense.
Because they're still Caucasian, and the reality is that they're not saying tear this thing down because of how it is. No, they're just saying, hey, this is it. But hey, I ain't saying this to you up front, but I'm glad I'm white. I'm glad I'm Caucasian because I still have benefits. I can say some things, but I still exactly had that privilege, just like Max Kellerman, you know?
Yeah. He's coming back on the political scene today. He done gave up his gig at ESPN. And ESPN, you know, they're just a contradiction on a real serious level. Now, you know how they treated Jemele Hill.
Right.
Now,
right.
You see how they treat the white boy, Keith Olbermann. You know, Keith Olbermann, they allowed him to resign from ESPN so that he could go on YouTube and do his political commentary.
Oh, man, because he was slamming Trump. Keith Olbermann was slamming Trump, man.
I'm gonna watch him.
Yeah, Keith Olbermann.
It's on YouTube, too.
Yeah.
And you can watch Keith anytime. Oh, I watch Keith because the one thing about Keith is he will give the cracker a little bit of hell every now and then. And he's funny with it.
Yeah.
You know? So you can always get a little different perspective. Now, how long it'll be, I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, the difference between him and people like your boy No Neck Martin is, people like No Neck Martin, they try to push black people into this agenda of being part of a system that does nothing but oppress us.
Well, see, that's why I'm saying, even though he made a pilgrimage, like many of American Africans, particularly made a pilgrimage to Africa, some more than likely Ghana, because Ghana was most welcoming in the 2019 era, that kind of thing. But there was other countries as well that many American Africans went to. And so he did.
Well, Ledge Group,
you know, yeah.
You need to get them back on soon, OC.
Okay.
They doing good things, bro.
I'm going to do that because I like them brothers and sisters.
Oh, I
really
them.
Do. But anyway, so, you know, but still, No Neck Martin, Fathead Roland Martin, is to me, is still black. He's not African. He's not African. That's what I'm saying.
But look at the core of who he is. He's a Mason, a Boulay.
Right. Yes, he is.
Yes, he is. A Christian.
Yeah.
So all four of those things is detrimental to Africanness. Yeah. Just think about it, four of those things, in all honesty, is anti-African when you put it into its broader scope, because all of them has a crust of being a part or wanting to be a part of inclusion in whiteness.
Yeah.
I mean, look at it. None of them are really talking about African principles.
No.
You know, even though
some
African principles.
Right, but see, that's the thing, though, Jess. That's the thing. That's the thing, Jay. They want to be a part of it, but they want it to be in blackface. See?
Wow.
See, they want the trappings. They want the good life. They want the suburban. They want the job. They want the car, but they want it in blackface. See?
Yeah.
See? But they don't understand. Yeah. Yeah. That's dangerous because they can easily be sold out.
And they confuse the people.
Yes.
They don't give the people a true understanding of who and what they dealing with. I mean, you know, to watch Roman's show, it's constantly about, well, we gotta vote because if we don't vote, this is what's gonna happen. Well, hey, if this gonna happen, why don't you try and set something up to kinda balance it? It's just like, what are Negroes gonna do if Fredo get back in office? I mean, what are we just gonna fall apart? What is the plan? What are you gonna move forward towards as a people?
I tell you,
what direction are we gonna go?
Jay, to me, he has made this so difficult for his ass to be reelected. It is unbelievable. Everything that he has been doing, particularly of late, he has made it so, he has alienated so many people, you know, in his behavior and the things he said, that it, only the deplorables, only those who mega hat wearing will vote for his ass. He is going to get dusted.
Well, hey, bro, all I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you, I'm betting on whiteness on this one. I believe whiteness going to come through for him.
And well, see, it came through him the last time.
My thing is this. I don't think that he's going to win vote-wise.
Oh, no, of course not.
I think he's going to win court-wise.
No, he ain't winning there either. No, Jay, he's not winning there. Because he made it. No, hold on. No, he's not. It ain't going to be in the damn Supreme Court. It's going to be too overwhelming. It ain't going to be no damn Supreme Court. It ain't going to be no. It ain't going to be no Electoral College. It ain't going to be none of that.
Oh, I believe so. Hey, Jay,
I'm not a betting man.
I'm going to tell you why. In key states, what's going to hurt us, and listen to what I'm saying, O, in Texas.
No, Jay.
In Florida.
No, Jay.
In North Carolina, it's going to be whiteness.
No, Jay.
In Florida, it's going to be that Baba Louie.
No.
And in Texas, it's going to be that Baba Louie. We'll see. We got a month to go, baby.
That's right. We got less than a month.
We got less than a month.
And I know we're both here prognosticating and Putin and pontificating. But let me tell you, he has done so much harm to himself and his campaign. It is ridiculous.
I agree.
It is ridiculous. When he did what he did just recently, not just when he coming out from Walter Reed Hospital and taking the mask off and saying, don't be afraid of this when all these over 200 some thousand people have died. No, he just said, I'm not going to sign the bill for the relief. What? And these people are financially hurting.
Think about this, though. Oh, check this out right quick. Yesterday, he said that he wasn't going to sign the bill at around 3 o'clock, 3:30 or something like that. The stock market tanked.
Right.
Oh, it tanked.
Right.
Do you know the day the stock market done went back up and regained what was lost yesterday? See, that's
why
I'm saying.
Why? Because he signed the bill?
Yeah. No, he didn't sign the bill. It's because it is what it is.
It is what it is. And that's what he looks at.
It's devious. And white folks are worse than devious. They treacherous. So they got to. We'll see. That's all I'm going to say.
I
believe it's going to be run in the Supreme Court.
Okay.
That's
not going to happen either. And she may not get confirmed. She may get confirmed in the lame duck session. I don't think she's going to get confirmed because of the amount of coronavirus within the White House itself, literally, and within the senators and so forth. But listen, let's get back to the discussion.
Yes.
Of neocolonialism. See, I can give less than a rat's ass about the partisan politics of this country, of whether he gets elected or not, or whether Biden gets elected, or even whether Kamala Harris becomes president, because that's a great possibility. That's why Caucasian women are really kind of pissed. But they're not going to vote for Trump. They're going to vote for Biden, particularly the older people are going to vote for him because how messed up Trump. Like I said, he's done so much damage to himself. But regardless of that, it ain't about, from my perspective, it ain't about this country. Because in this country, we will never, as African people, be respected. We will never share in this country equitably and fairly, because it's not in them to do so. But what I just read to you states also how there are an influence globally. I played a piece last week talking about the number of military bases, not just of America with AFRICOM, but Europe, with France, with Britain, of course, China, have military bases in Africa. because they are staking their claims on the mineral wealth of Africa, and they have a defense force to defend that. And yet here we are. And I know, you know, this conference is coming up next week, and I'm promoting it, and I'm going to be in it. Because why? I'm a Pan-Africanist. I believe that African people should be controlling their land, controlling their resources. I believe that African people should be the light for Africans who are outside the diaspora to say, hey, I know I have a home. I have a continent, an area, or a country within that that are doing great things. And so even though I'm in Europe, or even though I'm in the United States, and I'm doing whatever I'm doing here, I know I can always freely and go back there. That is my home. That is my base. You see? Because
no question.
See? And so that's what needs to be developed. That's what needs to be done. And the problem, of course, is that we think we got time. We don't have no damn time. Time is up. Time been up. Time is up. And now the thing is, either we shit or get off the pot. The bottom line is that either we're going to be Africans or we're not. And, you know, that's just like that question, what was that Shakespearean play, to be or not to be? And I know that the great ancestor, Dr. A.C. Hilliard, he made that statement too, to be African or not to be. And we need to ask ourselves. And we need to, and I ain't just talking about changing your damn name. I changed my name because that's how serious I am about this. But I don't advocate name changes. Hell, there's been some people who have been given some beautiful names with great meaning. But because they here in America, influenced by this foolishness and this craziness, they have done heinous things. So it ain't about a name change. It is about a mind change. Because once your mind is right, everything else will fall into place. If you feel you need you want an African name, you do so. If you don't, you can still be James Johnson as long as your mind is right. And that's our problem, Jay. So, you know, that's where we had this colonialism that got rid of Kwame Nkrumah. Imagine if he was able to do what he and Patrice Lumumba and even Idi Amin Dada, Thomas Sankara, all the other African leaders who understood and had the vision that it ain't about just my little country. It ain't about little Burkina Faso. It is about being in control of the continent of Africa, getting them crackers out of Namibia, getting them crackers out of South Africa, getting their asses out of Tanzania and Zimbabwe. Jay, listen to this. It was so damn pathetic that I saw a piece where these Africans in Zimbabwe were hugging the white folks who came back in so they could work that land. I was so hurt when I saw that. I just, you know, I'm saying to us, we have everything we need. The only thing we don't have is the mind and the heart to bring it into fruition. We have everything we need. We have many people who can be farmers. We have many people who can be scientists, many people who can erect cities and build roads and build sewage systems and water systems and energy systems. We have many people to do this. We have what we need.
We could do all for ourselves. I mean, you know, it's funny you say this, but like I said earlier, the Ledge Group is doing it.
Yeah.
Groups like that are laying the foundation. All you need is a little bit of assistance and help from the government and a little bit of stability in Africa, wherever country you may be in, to be able to flourish. The sad thing is that they disenfranchise and keep Africans separated from one another and so disunited that you have places like Ghana, South Africa, Tanzania, all of these places that could get us to repatriate to. But because of the destabilization, when this white man sees that we are trying to go there to do something and we don't have the military force to put them at bay,
right,
It's just a difficult process.
And
so until we change that, we always going to have to face this type of crises dealing with this cracker.
Yeah, and also, too, there are so many of us who are weak-minded, who act as agent provocateurs, who are into sabotaging for their own personal gains. You know, I mean, it's so sad and so pathetic that, you know, that's why, to me, we need to be able to deal with traitors. We need to be able to deal with anybody who is not on the program. First, get rid of your ass. If your ass is gone, fine. But now when you're in, if you want to be in, you better be in. Because if it's proven that you're not, we'll kill you. And you should be killed. You are a traitor.
No question.
You should
it's
be killed.
It's too much running. It's Oshie. The real issue is, in all honesty, it's too much one in whiteness. When you as a people want Africanness and solely Africanness, and you're willing to do whatever you have to do to be African and to put forward nothing but African ideas, then that's what's most important. Unfortunately, we get caught up into a form of Europeanism that has indoctrinated our minds to the point to where we lose some of the African principles that we need to sustain ourselves as a people. And that's what we haven't gotten back. So whereby we get caught up in wanting luxuries instead of practical things,
right.
things that
right.
we need to survive. And that's
right.
why the white man always get us. Because we can't never be content with just having what we have and surviving with what we have and being happy and content with it. Whenever you find a man that's content with himself and his surroundings, that's the type of man he's not caught up in your BS. You know what I mean? And that's what, in a lot of ways, that's what mom and pa, big mama and them had back in the day. Now you don't get that. You too busy hustling and bustling.
Well, you know,
that's
the thing
why
is.
You don't have families no
right,
more.
Right. Because the
you
thing
don't
is.
Have contentment.
Because the thing is, this is. America is about individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. That's what America is about. And it's hard to establish good, honest relationships with that kind of environment. It's hard to establish community and family. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. When you have over 70% of the children that are being born are not born in a relationship between a man and a woman. It's just a sister who's trying to raise that child or children. You know, while there's many men who have father children who don't, or gave birth to children, they didn't give birth, but you know what I mean, but don't act like fathers. Now, granted, there are some brothers that are doing their responsibility, and don't take don't take pride in it. It is your responsibility. That's what you're supposed to do, you know? Don't be looking for accolades. You're supposed to stand up and be a man to your children, to your daughters, to your sons. And be an example, even if the relationship with the mother's not there. But say to her that, hey, I want them to know who I am. I want them to know my family. I want them to understand and be respectful of men and to be an example. But we don't have that. We don't have that because that's by design. Because one of the things that the European knows that I can continue to control you when you don't have good family life. I can continue to control you when you're at each other. No other group, Jay, where the women will say, these motherfuckers ain't shit. Any other group saying that?
Not at all.
Not at all.
You never see the white woman take the white man in the court the manner in which our groups take the man. But you know what also has really hurt us, Oshie, that we're not honest about? Because the society has set forward the narrative on it, homosexuality.
Yeah, that's an issue.
Homosexuality, in all honesty, has really, really destroyed
the
fabric of society. Because I like it back in the day when I was growing up. I got a cousin who's a homosexual. I know he's a monkey man, twisted sister, you know, booty bandit. But you know something? He's never came out.
Right.
And I like that.
Right.
I like that. Because that's the way that it should be, because he's not overly a flaming monkey man, twisted sister.
Well,
now, when you're overly flaming monkey man, twisted sister, that's a whole different story, like Magic Johnson, son.
Yeah.
That's just, you know, you can't deny the freak for what the freak is.
Right. There are many of them.
Like you straight, and you can present yourself as being straight, then there ain't no reason for you to come out the closet.
Let me say this, Jay. You know? In our struggle, there is no planks. The bottom line is independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. There ain't no plank for homosexuality. There ain't no plank for any deviancy. There ain't none. No, you. I don't care what your sexual preferences are. That's your business, and keep it as such. But what I care about is how are we going to work together to achieve the goals for African sovereignty and African liberation.
That's
now,
right.
You know, so what you want to do in your nighttime or who you sleep with is your damn business. I always said
just
this,
don't
Jay.
Throw it in my face.
That's right. I always said this. What consenting adults do in the privacy of their own home is their business. I put emphasis on consenting and adults and privacy of their own home because I don't want to see that. Okay, but that's their business and keep it there. But if you are talking about being a part of the liberation movement, that's why, you know, I could never be and never promote the Black Lives Matter movement. Because, you know, when you have an agenda that states in their literature, when you go to their website, it states that, you know, we're here to do promote alternative family structures where women are rearing children and rearing male children. No. And you're excluding all men. No. You know, I can't G for that. Now, granted, I don't want nobody to be discriminated. I don't. And if somebody's homosexual, that should be their business. And when they come up for a job or promotion, they should be judged on their work, not who they sleep with or how they sleep with or, you know. But obviously, too, if you are looking like, you know, as you say, you know, then that's another issue. I'm saying if you're a man, be a man. But if you are transvestite or if you are transgender and that's who you are, then that's who you are. You know? And if you got the money to go through all those changes to do that, then so be it for you. You know? Hey, man, I ain't lying, Jay. This was funny as hell. There was one piece I was watching on one of the news programs, 2020 or something like that. There was a dude in the military. And so he got a sex change to be a woman so he can mess with women. He got a sex change to be a lesbian.
That a Neanderthal?
Yeah, I mean, this is crazy. The mindset of the European is whack.
That's the logic of a white man.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm telling you.
White men have that type of stupid logic. So now think about it. I can't get no woman. I can't not no woman. So now I'm going to change and try to find a woman, which is probably a little more harder than having your rap game up to snuff.
Yeah.
That's how easy it is. Because, you know, I know there's women that's into it, you know, whatever, but your chances are better attracting a woman as a straight male than it is being a lesbian woman.
Yeah.
And I would suppose. And, you know, that just shows the twisted sick mind of these Neanderthal knuckle draggers.
Yeah, well,
you know, how do you give your manhood?
Because the reality is this: because of their evolutionary development, caused them to have those kinds of leanings, okay, and those kinds of fetishes and those kinds of ideas, all the way back from the very beginning of their evolutionary process, is deeply
within the Greek society. There's statues. There's statues of Greek men with young boys. There's statues of Greek with young children, pedophilia. There's images of that in Rome and so forth on that decline. But there, you know, there was a brother who lived in Milwaukee, one of the elders in the Yoruba community, one of the esteemed elders, Manahochi, and he moved here to Atlanta. And his wife, Nanahochi, she gave me my name. She gave me a name at an African naming ceremony. And so when she passed, I had to honor her. I was at the firehouse when I found out she passed. I didn't know that. And I left the firehouse that day and because I had to go pay respects to her for what she had done in my for me. But anyway, he wrote a piece that said, I have studied African cultures and nowhere have I found homosexuality to be an issue within those African cultures. And it's not. It is not. But it is today. It is today. In fact, because of the effeminization of us as people here in this country, there is a deep proliferation of homosexuality, male and female, in this country. And to me, because of the acceptance of it, and they've made you accept it, you know, there are laws now. They've made you accept it, you know. But I, once again, I ain't got no problem with whatever you want to do in the privacy of your own home is your business.
You do. Just don't put it in my face.
That's right. It's
don't
your business.
Don't put it on me if you know I ain't a part of that swing. You know
that's
what
right.
I mean? I mean, certain things you can go on and do, but I don't need to know, and I don't need it around me.
But see,
and I'm going to say something about it if you bring it around me, because I'm not in the Monkey Man Twisted Sisterism.
Well,
you
listen, I got to go, Jay.
Right?
I got to go, brother. Listen, you have you have a great weekend, Jay. You have a safe weekend, my brother, okay?
Hey, Oshie. Yeah. Oshie, it's only Wednesday, brother. You'll be on Friday.
You I'm getting ahead of myself. take care, Jay. Brothers and sisters, I appreciate this time all the time, but that's a serious issue of neocolonialism on the continent, which is so pervasive still to this day. It's an issue that we need to look at. The brothers and sisters who listen to this program, I hope you understand that the issue is not about this damn country and its politics and its partisan politics, all the other bull. The issue for us as African people is the continent of Africa. And how are we going to reclaim, recapture, and restore? That's the issue. And everything that we're doing should be geared in moving in that direction. The educational process, when we accumulate knowledge and information and wealth and so forth, geared towards making the continent a reality for us as African people. That's the bottom line. This Friday, I'll have as my guest once again the brothers from the Pan-African Federalist Movement, whose conference is coming up next weekend. Next weekend. So be with us. We end this program, like in all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell, damn it, don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bivahodie. Bivahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a wonderful day. See you on Friday. Peace, family.